Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
I am well aware of the date. I hope you are as well, given the fact that it's January 22nd. It's the 48th anniversary of Roe versus Wade, and we're going to talk about that in the final segment of the show with my buddy Troy Newman, who's the president of Operation Rescue. But between now and then, we'll talk. Well, I don't know if you call it politics or if you call it policy. It's kind of both. And trying to calm down from the election fervor, okay, and then just basically put on your critical thinking cap and consider what's going on with the Biden administration, especially right now with executive orders flying about all over the place, and think critically and get a hold of your emotions, and let's kind of work our way through these policies as they come fast and furious. And how are they going to affect the country? And for even those of us here in North Carolina, how are they going to affect us? Brooke Medina, years ago, how long have we known each other now? Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you. I think about 3 years now.
It's longer than that.
No.
Yes,
no.
It is.
Okay, time flies when you're having fun.
All right,
fun.
Time flies when you're having fun. Brooke is the Vice President of Communications at the John Locke Foundation here in North Carolina, a wife, a mother, a military family background, as well as her husband served in the military and retired, and which is crazy. It's such a cool deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you guys are so young, yet he retired
already. Oh, we're super young. So young.
Yeah, well, you are. You're a millennial. What are you, in your mid-30s still?
Let's not talk about that right now, but yes, we are younger.
That sounds good to me, because I'll be 50.
It's all relative as to where you're standing on the age range.
Which is depressing. Anyway, Brooke is a fellow sister in Christ. We agree on most things. We don't agree on everything, and very healthy conversation and dialogue over the years, and it's been really cool to watch you grow. Somebody that knows what she's talking about and is well-read and well-educated and bring that to all these important issues. So we're going to talk about the Biden administration and what's going on policy-wise. We're going to kind of focus in on four things. We're going to talk about the minimum wage. We'll talk about taxes. We'll talk about energy, like with Keystone. And then we're also going to talk about this executive order dealing with gender and sexual identification and all that kind of stuff, which is a big religious liberty threat. But from a 30,000-foot view, Brooke, I mean, what were you thinking? What were your concerns? What do you kind of really got your radar on for with an incoming, now sitting Biden administration?
You know, if it had just been Biden alone and the Republicans held the Senate, I would have a vastly different outlook, I would say. Yeah. But at the moment now, I'm in the position where I would say conservatives are wise to brace themselves. Progressive policies are on their way, inevitably. Executive orders such as the ones we've already seen this week, expect more of them. Of course, you see a barrage typically at the very beginning.
Sure.
But you know, not all hope is lost. I'm not saying that. And I'm sure that there will be opportunities for bipartisanship, I would hope. But overall, we know where Biden stands on a lot of these issues. Because the Democratic Party tells him to.
Right,
he's very wishy-washy.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be disrespectful to him as our new sitting president, but if you just look at his record, you can see that he kind of just goes with, you know, with whatever the prevailing winds are.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you said they go, well, Joe Biden used to be more moderate. Well, like you said, he goes with the prevailing winds, so there are periods in his past and decades of public service, call it whatever you want, where you could see that, but that's politicians are not usually operating outside of the reality that they're playing a different game all the time. Just depends on what's in the air at the time. And will the real Joe Biden stand up? None of that stuff matters to me. Mm-hmm. He's got an enormous progressive agenda and progressive players all around him. He's got a lot of Obama retreads, and we're going to get a very leftist agenda from them for 2 years and 4 years. And then the Senate, which I was hopeful because Schumer and McConnell were talking about, well, we actually had a 50-50 tie in the Senate back during the Bush administration. Didn't last very long, but they had 50-50 sharing of power. Every committee was 50-50. There were two heads of the committee, all that kind of stuff. And they left the filibuster in place, which basically puts you in a position where you have to have 60 votes to pass anything. So you would like to think there's a bulwark there. But do you think that they might blow out? I don't know how they would blow out the filibuster because they're 50-50. They'd have to do a vote. It would go 50-50. Kamala Harris swoops in and puts the 51st vote in there. But to me, that's about the only thing that would withhold some of this agenda.
Right. And then just thinking about some of the maybe more moderate Democrats or those that sometimes cross the aisle.
Joe Manchin.
Sinema sometimes. Uh-huh. And so just thinking about some of them and what they're going to probably be listening to their constituents a little bit more closely, and they have to hedge their votes a little bit. And so I think that that might be a saving grace as well. And let me just say really quickly, no matter what, I know there were a variety of opinions on the inaugural address, but I at least appreciated his tone during that, even if I didn't agree with all the words of it. I thought it was good tone. And so I know that those are always aspirational sort of speeches.
Right.
But, you know, who knows? Maybe there will be some opportunities wherein there is some bridge building.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I expected it to be more partisan than it was. I could pick it apart all day long. Right. But generally, knowing that, okay, it's an inaugural address. And being Joe, I was impressed that he didn't trip over his own tongue more than he was. Only a couple of things, and that was normal stuff. I do that in the course of the day, and he's a lot older than I am. And so, I appreciated some of that tone, but it's rhetoric, and it's an inaugural address, and he's trying, hey, I'm here for all the people, even if you didn't vote for me. But then that afternoon in the office, he's signing things that he knows are incredibly partisan. Yeah.
And he put up a photo of FDR right in the middle of the Oval Office. I mean, grafter of the internment
ding, ding,
camps. Okay.
Yeah, ding, ding, ding,
but anyways,
ding, ding. Yes.
We're still hopeful.
We digress. Yes, we'll remain hopeful. And I've been saying this for months now, if your house is built on the rock of the sand of politics, your house is built on the wrong foundation. So we can be concerned and engaged, but if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you should not be overwhelmingly rocked by this stuff. If you are, then I would just tell you, you need to inspect your foundation. Okay, setting that aside. All right, we're going to hit a break here in a minute, but let's start with the minimum wage, because I know this is one that's got a widespread impact, and a lot of people, I don't think understand it.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting because this is constantly pitched to the American people as something that's compassionate. It's requiring businesses and big corporations to just another way that they can pay their fair share. But this is really a way in which lower wage earning Americans are once again hit, because guess who's going to be automated out of a job really soon when you mandate this? But also think about small businesses that now have to do this, and they can't compete with the McDonald's that might be able to provide a $15 an hour minimum wage. So it's unfortunate.
I want to keep talking about that and how who gets covered under a federal minimum wage and who doesn't. If there's any loopholes there, I want to talk about that. How does it affect people? I was doing some calculations with my 19-year-old son who works at Bass Pro Shop. And I said, well, this is probably a $30 to $40 to $50 million hit on their bottom line. And what are they going to do? Just take it? No, they aren't. Who's going to pay? We'll talk about that when we come back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, talking about the implications of some Fast and Furious trains on the tracks. It's moving quickly, the Biden administration and their policies. We're here with Brooke Medina, who's the Vice President of Communications with the John Locke Foundation. What's the website at John Locke, by the
way? JohnLocke.org.
LOCKE, as in the John Locke. Okay, JohnLocke.org, John Locke Foundation. And so we're talking about these policies, talking about minimum wage, and what will be the repercussions. You said this before, setting this up. It sounds compassionate. It sounds kind. I know there's a lot of people, Christians, that would say it sounds Christ-like. We want to make sure people are making more money. And if you're at McDonald's, how can you survive on $8 an hour? And that's $320 a week or $16,000 a year. That's not a living wage, obviously, yada, yada. But there are some other things to consider with a minimum wage, such as what? What else would happen?
Well, it prices people that don't have as high of an education out of the labor market, essentially, because that increases the incentive to automate. You know, people talk about robots are coming for your job.
Right.
Well, government is just like pushing this like even further down the line on that front, down the production line. And so this is, like I said, it sounds like it's something that is motivated by these altruistic motives. It's a heart for the poor, allegedly, but it's a wrongheaded policy that actually hurts those that are lower income earners. It also hurts even teenagers when you think of it. And so I thought that this was an interesting correlation regarding this. So minimum wage increases in various cities and states led to fewer jobs for teens and fewer hours worked by those teens, which correlated with a criminal externality cost. Huh. And so it drove up crime rates because there's fewer teens that have jobs that are meaningful. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you think about ways, it just like second and third order of effects. Another thing is that it leads to price inflation because inevitably the businesses, there are three different types of people that are going to pay for the minimum wage increase. You know, oftentimes like Elizabeth Warren will claim that it's the really wealthy right. that are going to be right. absorbing this cost,
sure
except that they still have options. Right. They can go invest their money elsewhere.
Yes, that's right.
But then there are those that the workers will inevitably pay that price. There will be fewer of them that are available to be hired because the businesses don't want to invest in that anymore because of the wage requirements. And then there's consumers. And so you think in terms of even groceries, that single mom or that family that is just struggling to make ends meet, and now they have to pay more in their groceries now just because the grocery stores have to pay their workers more. And so there's all these different dynamics, and so it's anything but compassionate. And gratefully, right now, just in the way that our markets work, we still have a minimum wage.
Yeah.
Each state has their own minimum
wage. They have their own.
And
of course, companies have their own. Hobby Lobby's minimum wage is $13 an hour.
Yep. Target's, I think, is $15. Yeah. So there's companies are doing this on their own when they're
right.
able to because they want a competitive employment or, you know, they want employees that can be competitive and they want to pay them a competitive wage. And so companies are voluntarily already doing this. So when you're hurting the mom and pops and those smaller
yep.
businesses, there's something wrongheaded about that.
Well, we saw this when they did this out in Oregon, and you saw it in Portland. Here's one. Posey's Bakery and Cafe, right? Obviously a small business. Quote, small businesses like mine are frequently communicated with as if we were a Fortune 500 operation, but we're not, she said. When wages go up, prices have to go up. There's no margin to absorb that cost. And I have another friend on Facebook Live watching us right now. Nina was saying it's going to cost her an extra, $100 to $130 per week per employee. And guess what? If you change nothing else, that means, Nina, you get to make $100 to $130 less per employee for you every week. All this stuff flows downhill and eventually causes a problem. It sounds good, but it actually doesn't work. It's government control versus a free market, and that's a big problem. Let's talk about taxes. This is going to be fun because they're going to raise taxes pretty much across the board, right?
That's sure what it seems like, which is funny because, you know, Biden and company regularly promise it's not going to impact the middle class. It always impacts the middle class. And the thing is, let me just preface all of this with, you know, for years we've been hearing about, you know, from the left about income inequality and things like that. But if you actually look at the trends, income is going up across the board.
Yeah.
People are highly mobile. Thank God. Like
right.
capitalism has lifted more people out of poverty
oh.
than any other economic system.
That's right.
And so, you know, that's the backdrop of all of this. So, yes, there are still income disparities. But unless you can actually enforce and enact a quest for cosmic justice where you're actually achieving justice
yeah.
that you know, no government is equipped to do, then this is just the nature of the beast. But when we're talking about Biden administration taxes, namely the corporate income tax is what we're looking at is going to go up. And that's going to go up about 33%
yeah,
if he has
huge.
His way.
Yep.
But what does that mean? It's not just the big corporations. They constantly say this.
Right.
These are regular business owners that are, you know, you may know or you yourself might be one. And so the way in which that impacts us is that results, once again, like the minimum wage, fewer jobs and fewer employment opportunities.
Yeah, and it's not like what you're saying is theoretical.
No.
We have
yeah.
plenty of history and hard numbers to go look at. When you do this, this is what happens. And so we saw this under the Trump administration, and unfortunately COVID shot all that in the foot for a while. But you saw that the impacts of unleashing the economy – unleashing the free market versus leashing it and trying to control it, it's always better. And that's why you saw across the board increases for all kinds of people, not just unemployment rate, but wages, real wages were going up, all kinds of things. A rising tide really does lift all boats. So you're going to see a 33% increase in corporate taxes. What about personal income tax? What's going to happen there? Do you have any of that?
I don't have the numbers on that one yet. That's a really good one.
And then capital gains is
the one that I was also looking at before the show is just that the capital gains tax would essentially double, which you think about
Man.
That. So right now it's at 20%, I
yep.
believe. And so it would go up to 39% and
Jeez.
Some change. And so that's incredible. But what does that do? That sends a signal to investors, which could be investing in like startups of people that immigrated here that are
right.
feeling very entrepreneurial. They want to pursue the American dream. And this translates into dissuading investment
right.
into that.
Yeah.
And so you think, If I want to kill the economy, I'll do this. Not if I want to help it.
Right, right. So. Yeah, because so you're telling me if I invest and then when I get my money out, I'm going to give 40% to the government. At some point, there's a diminishing return. And then at some point, you just go zero. You're out. There's no reason. The same thing happened with confiscatory tax rates under Carter, which the highest marginal tax rate was like 72%. And our inflation rate was crazy. Our loans, get this, a home loan, was coming in at about 22%. You buy a $100,000 house, and it's 22 grand that year in interest. That was the reality. It was wild. Yeah. And this is the, you know, again, this is mostly just political pandering, isn't it? Because from a calculator standpoint, it doesn't work.
Yeah, well, and that, and you think about the government nowadays, the federal government, they just print more money.
Oh my goodness.
So, like, they are not attached to the consequences of their action.
Right.
Our children and our grandchildren are.
Yeah.
But they just, you know, they assume modern monetary theory. Like, they subscribe to that. You just print more money.
And we'll spend our way out of it.
Right. And so it's unfortunate because there are so many victims. I can't remember which person said this first, but it's bad ideas have ideas have consequences, but bad ideas have victims. And this is certainly the case here. And so I think that Americans are wise to just be strategic in how they invest their money over the next couple of years.
Yeah, Barry, you got to be on the defense. We were talking about that with David Fisher from Landmark Capital on Monday. I'm sure we'll talk it again this coming Monday. And as somebody that deals with investments, he's like, yeah, you better buckle up and you better be defensive because this is going to get ugly. We're talking to Brooke Medina, Vice President of Communications with the John Locke Foundation. When we come back, either energy like Keystone, because who cares if those guys have a job or not. And then all the gender sexual identification stuff that's going on. We'll be right back.
So if you're happy in your stuff and if 10% is enough, stay.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, talking to Brooke Medina today, the Vice President of Communications at the John Locke Foundation, kind of looking at the implications of the Biden agenda, which the train is on the track, whether you like it or not. Donald Trump's not going to come swooping back in by some crazy QAnon theory. Sorry. And I've been withholding my angst and the things that I want to say about profits and about QAnon, and I'm going to continue to do that for a little while. But pretty soon, I'm going to take the shackles off of that because I think there's some lessons there for us as Christians that we need to learn. But I'm not going to do it yet because if I started talking about it this week or next week, I know my motivation would be off. I would not be saying things out of love, and so I'm going to wait until the Holy Spirit tells me my heart is right. And then we'll talk about it. But as we look at these things, the train is on the track, so you got to deal with what's happening, and things are happening quickly. So we talked about the minimum wage. We talked about taxes going up. Let's talk about energy in general and Keystone, and then I want to make sure we talk about this other executive order for those most of the audiences, Christians, conservative Christians, the executive order on preventing and combating discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. We'll finish with that. But let's talk about energy in the Keystone, which they just shut down. Start wherever you want, but there's going to be huge implications here. Gas prices already went up 12 cents a gallon here in North Carolina since Biden took office. So what can we expect?
Yeah, I mean, well, just think about this. First off, this is an agreement, a private agreement with Canada. So this is a private company investing in this in order. It creates American jobs. Obviously, it's making the investors money, but it's also providing affordable energy to Americans.
Hello.
And so when you think about the government swooping in and saying, nope, your permit's canceled now. After all this money, all this capital has been invested, first off, that deters future investors because everything is on shaky ground. But also think about how it impacts our relationship with Canada. Canada is our second largest trading partner behind China. We're not on good terms with China. We don't even care to be, like, you know, so think about that. So they're our first friendly trading partner. That's our largest one. And it's obviously they're doing what they can. Trudeau and Biden are on two different ends of this right now.
Because Trudeau was his first call to a foreign leader.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, sorry.
Permit canceled.
Permit canceled.
Right.
Cancel culture.
That's
that's 1,000 people that lost their jobs literally immediately. Bad news, hon. Bad news, babe. I'm unemployed. And those are high paying jobs. Those are people that were doing quite well.
Well, and
people
all
down there working on it. I mean, blue collar type.
The backdrop of COVID, our economy is already, it's already been, you know, had to come to a grinding halt on numerous levels in numerous ways. And I was just looking, this is a little bunny trail, but I think it's important. I was looking at a chart the other day from Morning Consult, actually this morning, and it was just talking about the impact on mental health and physical health and personal finances of these shutdowns in this COVID time. Women are just like three or four times more impacted on the mental health front than men are. And I just think as a female, just knowing just the different burdens I carry, but it just broke my heart to think about how the Biden administration or progressives and some on the right too will just, you know, they'll pay lip service to caring about those that are maybe marginalized or struggle a little bit more than others. And yet we see the effects of these policies play out and we realize who those real victims are. And it's these same people that they're, you know, espousing that they want to help.
Oh, there's so many. I've been talking about this since last March. All the different dominoes that have lined up behind COVID, setting aside the virus itself, all these other dominoes, which will be falling for years. And I don't know about your kids, Brooke, with you and James, but I know at least for our 16-year-old daughter, it was very difficult. A lot of depression, anxiety, having to deal with the loss of all that social interaction. Yeah. Brutal. And that's just a small portion of society. Yeah, that we're going to be dealing with that stuff for years. So there's Keystone. But what about energy in general? Do you think that he's going to be all thrown in on the Green New Deal? Are we going to see a bunch of that happen in the next 2 years?
So Patrick Gleason from Americans for Tax Reform, he spoke a little bit to this the other day on the John Locke Facebook event. And his thought on it was that essentially Congress with Biden, they won't have the ability to necessarily, pass a Green New Deal or anything like that. But they will be able to, you know, implement greater tax rates and things like that through reconciliation votes. But the Green New Deal, which would essentially be taxes and, you know, in order to penalize people who aren't using clean energy, that sort of thing isn't going to pass this go around.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that we should be wary of those things, but I don't think that's necessarily imminent. However, there are many other ways in which, you know, through regulation that Americans are going to suffer as a result of these sort of energy friendly or green friendly deals. And of course, the energy will suffer, the energy industry, but also just Americans that are having to pay more for energy.
Oh, man, yeah, right down on the level with your energy at home, you're putting gas in your car, whatever the case may be. We're talking to Brooke Medina, Vice President of Communications at the John Locke Foundation. I just put the links up for the John Locke Foundation website as well as their Facebook page, so make sure you get involved there and get on the email list and pay attention because there's great information coming out of the foundation all the time. All right, so let's do this last one because this one people really need to understand. There's going to be a lot of implications from a religious liberty perspective. Executive order, he signed it day one, January 20th. Executive order on preventing and combating discrimination on the basis of gender identity or sexual orientation. This is like a bathroom bill on steroids, essentially.
Yeah, well, and we continue to have this very fundamental argument. And it is funny because you think about COVID, we constantly hear trust the science, trust the science, trust the science. But when it comes to gender identity, sexual orientation, things like that, science is completely secondary. And it's heartbreaking because this impacts not only it tells the person who's struggling with gender dysphoria, you know, accept this. You actually you need to accept this or else you're not being true to yourself.
Right.
And so it prohibits them from being able to seek counseling from those who if they don't want to deal with this.
Right.
And then obviously it has negative impacts on women and girls when you're thinking in terms of just. We've all heard it, you know, the locker rooms, the bathrooms and things like that. But I would say even in sports, and sports has already taken a beating over this past year. And just thinking about the fact that so many females would be forced to compete with males. And we just know biologically they're not females just can't compete like that.
Yeah, sorry. You want to be a science denier. Go ahead. But we've already seen the devastating effects. You mentioned the impact of a lot of the COVID things disproportionately on women. And this one disproportionately 10-1 on women, not just in the sports issue that now you can have guys that claim to be women competing with women, which means the women won't be able to compete in most cases, if not all cases. But now you have a danger factor because you just opened up. That's why I mentioned the bathroom bill. You just opened up every girl's locker room, every girl's bathroom at all ages to any man that just has to say he identifies as a woman. So when I was 15, if I could get into the girls' locker room at my high school by saying I identified as a girl, I can guarantee you, Brooke, now this is before Christ, just to clarify.
Let's preface
that. I would do it as a joke. I can get it. And then the principal says, you can't go in there, Steve. I know you're a raging heterosexual. Well, not today, I'm not.
Right.
And who are you to question?
And they could be sued. And so, right. like, it silences them, essentially, from being able to actually challenge that. And so it's just got so many second and third order effects, but also thinking about in terms of how I don't know exactly how this executive order will play out. But if you think about Christian universities, yeah. private schools, churches, things like that, who very much espouse an Orthodox Christian view on sexuality, how will this play out for them? And so, once again, this is just a violation of the First Amendment, but also I would say this, the whole big tech argument that we've been having too, is another First Amendment yeah. issue that's going to be coming up.
Well, and this will get tied to big tech censorship, because all of a sudden we can lump in order to call you a domestic terrorist. We can say that you're hate speech and you're dangerous because you want to take away somebody's identity,
right?
Which sounds a lot like slavery. And we're not going to allow that, obviously. So this is, and down to Christian organizations. Let's say you run a Christian daycare. You want all your employees to sign a statement of faith that you got to comply with our fundamental or orthodox beliefs. And so the transgender person comes in or the homosexual comes in and says, well, yeah, but that would be, you can't deny me the, you can't refuse this to me based on that. I'm not going to sign your thing. You don't have a right to make me sign your thing. And as a matter of fact, I can sue you. Because just to get you out of the context, everybody, so you really understand, the easiest way to do this is put the shoe on a different foot and go, okay, just use the color of somebody's skin. That's the easiest way to understand this. So you come into my church and I say, I'm sorry, we don't hire black people here. And everybody should be outraged, and we would be outraged, and the law would be all over you. The same exact power is now going into the realm of sexual identity, which they're claiming a Supreme Court decision last year, because they're starting to say, what does sex mean? Well, if you believe in science, forget the Bible. If you believe in science, sex is male or female, innie or outie, X chromosome, Y chromosome. It's not that complicated. But now the claim is, no, sex is a social construct. It's a mental position. And then it can be whatever right. you want.
Which it just makes it so nebulous and so difficult to identify and so elusive that it's unfortunate, because law should be black and white on yeah. these things. And that creates this uncertainty in the law, and it makes it really difficult to enforce, and yeah. it makes it unfair.
Yeah, it makes it unfair. We've been talking to Brooke Medina, Vice President of Communications at the John Locke Foundation. It's been so great to have you back in. Let's do this on a more regular basis. I really appreciate your input.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, we'll be right back with Troy Newman, who's not nearly as nice as Brooke. But he is one of my heroes. He's the president of Operation Rescue. It is the 48th anniversary of Roe versus Wade. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Good to be with you. Today, January 22nd, the 48th. I hate to use the word anniversary, because anniversary usually implies something that's good. This certainly is not, unless perhaps you're Joe Biden. But the 48th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court Roe versus Wade decision. Catholic Biden, this is from LifeSite News. Catholic Biden marks Roe versus Wade anniversary with a pledge to make abortion available for everyone. In the past 4 years, his statement here, in the past 4 years, reproductive health, including the right to choose, has been under relentless and extreme attack. I mean, who cares about babies after all? We are deeply committed to making sure everyone has access to care, including reproductive health care. Words have meaning, people. All right, pay attention. Regardless of income, race, zip code, health insurance status, or immigration status, I would add, perhaps, and regardless of whether the fact that you're a human being created in the image of God, you've got all the DNA you're ever going to have at a conception, but they don't want to deal with reality. They're science deniers when it fits them, and they don't deal with science when it doesn't. And so an interesting thing as we look at that, heartbreaking as always. One of my pro-life heroes, who probably at the top of the list, is my good friend Troy Newman, the president of Operation Rescue, who's been at this a long, long time. Troy, welcome back to the show, buddy. How are you?
Hey, thank you. I'm doing well. And I don't use the word anniversary either. I use the word memorial. Mm. We memorialize that terrible decision, and we remember the children that have died, 60, 80, 100 million. We don't know how many that have been killed through abortion, but thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Always great to have you. And as you know, unfortunately, knowing that this Biden administration was coming, like it or not, legal or not, whatever, setting all that aside, I'm sure you knew. I mean, if we lose the White House and Trump loses, then we're going to have a deluge of pro-abortion, pro-child death legislation and executive orders. And so as this reality started to really come into focus, Troy, how have you dealt with it? As a guy that's been dealing with this on the front lines for decades, literally as a follower of Jesus Christ, as an American, I'm just asking you on a personal level, how have you dealt with this turnaround?
Well, of course, it's devastating personally, and it has legal ramifications for my several lawsuits that are ongoing. And, of course, it'll have real results in the number of babies killed. But I'm a Christian first, and a Republican, an American second, third, maybe. But we realize that Jesus isn't sitting up on his throne. He's sitting at the right hand of God the Father Almighty. He's going to return. And Psalm 2, it says that he's putting his feet on a footstool, and his enemies are being placed under that footstool. So he's not up there wringing his hands going, doggone it, how did Biden steal the election? This took me by surprise. So there's a lot of hope in that, and that our faith resides solely in that. And so that's the first part. Second part, we have to understand that we were given a four-year reprieve. And now the Antichrist is in the world. There are many Antichrists in the world. And we're going to see this bloodletting, this bloodlust for dead babies, for homosexual rights. The list is really endless. And it's going to be on full display. And it reminds me of Romans 1, where God says, I gave them over.
Yeah.
I gave them over. Just like he gave Pharaoh over to a hardened heart. And they do crazy things when that happens.
Do you think that for those of us pro-life Christians, which would be every Christian on the planet, but I often tell people, hey, listen, you show me your pro-life faith by what you say, I'll show you my pro-life faith by what I do. I think we have way too many convictional Christians that have a pro-life profession of faith, but they don't do much with it. Do you think we focus, Troy, too much on the federal level, trying to overturn Roe versus Wade, seeing the Fed operate, whereas maybe most of the gains, certainly in the last 8 years, 10 years, a lot of that's been on the state level. Do you think we maybe have our focus off a little bit in that regard?
No, because it has to be both and. Because if we don't have Supreme Court justices and Congress and the White House, then the things that are done on a local level will be overturned. We've seen that for 48 years. But listen, I've been working locally for 30 years. I just left a major rally in St. Louis, Missouri, where St. Louis, we just closed down the last abortion mill in Missouri. We have the first abortion-free state.
Yep.
There's a reduction by 70% of the number of abortion mills in the last 15 years. 70% have closed, and that happens one at a time. A major abortion mill just closed a couple weeks ago in Portland, Oregon, of all places, the Lovejoy Clinic, which I've personally been arrested at. It's closed down. The forces of evil cannot withstand prayer warriors. They can't withstand directed, peaceful, pro-life action, because when God says, I'm going to give you what you ask for, and if you ask in my name, does he not want abortion clinics to close, babies to get saved? Of course he does. So we need to be persistent in prayer and in action and being hopeful for the hope that God will restore all things at some point in the future.
Do you think with the Missouri situation, and praise the Lord for that, an abortion-free state in terms of what's available, do you think that the pro-abortion industry will try to bring a lawsuit there? Because are they maybe concerned now because of the three justices that Trump put in that, well, maybe we shouldn't flirt with Roe versus Wade. Maybe we'll just leave this one alone.
Well, that's a good point, but I have zero faith that the hard left, the Antichrist, the anti-Christians have any common sense whatsoever. I mean, Biden just put in this guy for the health department that believes in science, but he thinks he's a girl. So there is no common sense over there. Will Rogers said one time, the famous political philosopher said, if the world made sense, it would be men that rode side saddle. So these people are crazy, and they do crazier things every single day. So, but we do work locally, and there are true red states. When you look at the number of counties in America that voted for traditional family values, we way outnumber the little dots on the coasts and the little small cities, you know, here and there. So I do believe, I still believe that the guys in the white hat win, okay? The guys in the black hat lose, just like every Roy Rogers movie and John Wayne movie out there.
Yeah.
We just need to keep working. Don't be discouraged. Don't grow weary in doing good. Keep moving forward, but do it circumspectly. Do it peacefully. Do it with honor and regard for Christ. But there is this persecution that's happening even right now. I was just on the phone with a friend of mine in California, and they're going to put pastors in jail for holding church, directly in contradiction to the First Amendment of the United States.
Yeah, I mean, they're really Katie barred the door. They're not going to be afraid to do anything like that. And the church really is the kind of the last bulwark, now that Trump's out of the way, the last bulwark against a lot of that agenda. What would you say, Troy? We've talked about this before, and I wrestle with this myself, because people say, well, you know, I'm pro-life, but that's not really an issue I have a tremendous burden for. I get involved with other things, yada, 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 which I understand where they're coming from. But what would you, as somebody that loves the Lord first and foremost, a Christian first, a Republican American on down the line, what do you think are the minimum acceptable levels of involvement for your Christian that claims Jesus Christ? Like, what if we're going to have a couple of things that they should check off and say, okay, I think I'm being a good steward, I'm being a good ambassador of the gospel in the pro-life arena because I do this, that, and the other thing. What do you think would be those minimum levels that we have to get into?
Well, gosh, I mean, voting, tithing, being in the right church. If your church didn't preach and rail against child killing this month, the Sanctity of Human Life month, sometime at this point, find a new church. Vote with your feet. Vote with your dollars. Be outspoken everywhere you can be, because sunlight is a natural disinfectant. We must verbalize and argue our point regularly. But just look, if the gospel isn't about life, if Jesus isn't about life, how many times does he say, I am the way, the truth, and the life? The thief comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I've come to give life and it to the fullest. He is life, and the forces of darkness, well, the Bible also says that those who hate God love death, and we see it displayed on all around us now. So I would say the discerning factor is if you've got friends or politicians or anybody you know that are pro-death, you need to give them a stern warning and then not support them. Don't support people who say they're pro-choice. They just kind of whitewash over this idea that abortion is nothing more than a clump of cells that's being removed. It's out and out murder of God's innocent children created in his likeness and image.
And how would you direct us or suggest we point our prayer life in terms of things to pray for? Obviously, the obvious one is we want to pray for an overturn of Roe versus Wade. But what else should we be leaning into in prayer on the subject?
Well, gosh, I mean, we have a debased country, a divided, debased country. And we need revival. We need to come. We need Jesus and the Holy Spirit to come and act in miraculous ways. And it's not like that he hasn't done that before. It's not like he hasn't saved people before.
Yeah.
If he can save individuals, he can save countries. He can save nations. We're still a beacon of light. We must pray like never before. But when the famous verse that everybody likes to quote is 2 Chronicles 7:14. If my people are called by my name, will humble themselves and pray. And then they forget this other little part. Turn from their wicked ways.
This other little part.
We got to turn from our wicked ways. We can't be duplicit. We can't have one foot in the world and one foot in church. We got to turn away from it. Are your investments invested in Planned Parenthood or Chinese gulags or totalitarian type regimes? Go look at your investments. I know it's just in some 401k or Edward Jones or something like that. Get out of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, quit underwriting it, certainly, with your dollars. Troy Newman, as always, great to hear from you, buddy. President of Operation Rescue, love and appreciate you, and you just continue to be an inspiration. Thanks for the time today, buddy. We appreciate it.
Back at you, buddy. Godspeed.
All right, bro. Talk to you later. Take it easy. Lovelife.org, you can do that. Here's how it started for me. This was about 15 years ago. Somebody asked me during 40 Days of Life to go pray at an abortion clinic. It was a Planned Parenthood in Chapel Hill. I showed up. I was the only one signed up for that 1 hour. I stood out in front of an abortion clinic for an hour and prayed. I'd never seen one, never been around one, and that changed everything for me because I was all of a sudden face to face with the dark reality that in this nation we still kill babies for money. And I would suggest you do that. You don't need an organization to do it. You just need to get out there and be faithful. This is Steve Noble on The Steve Noble Show. God willing, we'll talk again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.